Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, we're joined by Capitol Police Sergeant Aquilino Gonell. He's served on the U.S. Capitol Police Force for 15 years. But in all those years, one day will forever stand out for him. January 6th, 2021, the day of the insurrectionist attack on Congress.
Hey, brother, we're boots on the ground here. We're moving on to Capitol now. I'll give you a boots on the ground update here in a few.
Multiple Capitol entries! Multiple Capitol entries! We're still taking metal, sharpened objects, missiles, to include bottles and rocks, and hand-drawn chemical-grade fireworks. Effectively a riot.
Okay, guys, apparently this tip of the spear has entered the Capitol building.
If I give this up, they're going to have direct access. At least this Capitol we can defend. We got to hold what we have.
Lock the shields. Lock them together.
There's a 50 hit tank. 1033. I repeat, 1033. What's from the Capitol?
Jimmy, get him to the back! Let's get some fresh faces up front!
They've got the gallows set outside this Capitol building. It's time to start using them.
Start making a list! Put all those names down! Yep. And we start hunting them down one by one!
Yeah. Traitors, get rid of them!
Mobilize in your own cities, your own counties, storm your own Capitol buildings, and take down every one of these corrupt.
Moments there from police body cam footage and from walkie-talkie communication between insurrectionists on January 6th. Sergeant Aquilino Gonell, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
To this day, when you think back to what happened on January 6th, what's your first memory, the first thing you think of?
Oh, the struggle. Just listening to the introduction, it gives me goosebumps and takes me right back to some of the things that I was doing, defending myself, my fellow officers, and as well as some of the members, Congress and senators that were inside the building from this violent mob. And it's very, very intense.
Yeah. How did your day start that day?
My day started around 5:30. When I left my house after saying goodbye to my wife and my son that was still sleeping. Took me about 40 minutes to get to work. When I got to work, normally I get there about an hour before everybody else from my shift to gather information to put out to the officers. That way I don't look like an idiot in front of them and asking questions and whatnot and not having the answers. But after that, we just did the inventory of our equipment, make sure we had this, make sure we had that, put out the information we had at that time regarding the potential, the demonstrations and also what possibly could occur. After that, we got, after roll call, we did some down time, relaxed for an hour or two, get breakfast, and then we started getting at least half dress. So we'll be ready.
Do you mind if I ask, Sergeant? When you say that, you know, you got initial information about the what was then everyone thought was just going to be, you know, a rally outside down the street from the Capitol. Was there any more information that you had at the beginning that even gave you a hint about what was eventually to come?
During the days leading up to, probably 2 days before, some of my subordinates, they have Twitter. So I don't have Twitter. So at that time, they all were telling me, hey, this is what is coming down on Twitter. This is what they're saying. I'm like, well, I don't have anything coming down from the chain on any type of emails suggesting that it's going to be that type of event. I know. And so what I did tell them is, in order to alleviate their concerns, I reached out to some of my higher ups. Some of them gave me directives in terms of how to approach the situation. Some of them, they actually talked to the officer because they wanted to hear from other than me. You know, I'm kind of like one at the same level as them, but just a little more pay. Can't provide the information that's provided to me. I'm not going to make things up and make it worse and have them distrust me. So I had requested I had two different chain command for that particular day. I had a crowd control unit chain command rather than my normal chain command. So I did reach out to some of my supervisors. Some of them, they already had gotten some of this training and were purview to some information that I wasn't. So I told them, hey, they want to hear from other person than me. And one of them did. They came down and talked to them. We did tabletop training. We talk about what can we do if things get out of hand. But however, we never anticipated this getting this out of hand at this magnitude that it was, which is a breach and an attack in the Capitol from multiple sides.
So, Sergeant, it sounds like you're saying, though, that your own officers, just to be sure I heard you correctly, were seeing things on Twitter that may have alarmed them, but you weren't getting similar information down your regular chains of command in advance of January 6th.
In a way, like I said, I didn't have Twitter at that time, I hardly go on social media because of the things people say. Some people make stuff up. Some people are just venting. Some people are just. But then, what I told this guy, our guys, were, look, you remember your training, remember what we went through in terms of like exercises, tabletops, training, and trust your fellow officers. You know, we all have the same training. We all are capable of doing what we are signed up for. So rely on that and you know, go from there. I mean, we never anticipated this to be go sideways as it did.
To put it mildly, I mean, it turned into a violent attack on the Capitol. As the count of the electoral or the certification of the Electoral College vote was going on, where were you when after the rally, where former President Trump spoke, and then people began surging towards the Capitol? So where were you, and how did you first realize that things were definitely becoming more violent than anyone had anticipated?
Some of the officers that were watching on their phone as we were on downtime waiting for anything, for the call for us to respond and be in place. When we were at the north entrance of the CBC and we were like half dressed, by the time like 10 minutes before the speech ended, I immediately told my guys, hey, get dressed. This might be get out of hand, because now they are saying that we are might be an impediment to them for the goal for Stop the Steal. And the day before, too, I told them the same thing. Look, you know, they've been here before. This group, I think it was two or three times prior, and we didn't ever have any issues with them. But this time around, we myself and my other supervisor, we told them the same thing. Look, this time might be different, because now they might turn on us, because they might see us as an impediment to their goal, which is, as they say during the rally, Stop the Steal. So
yeah.
From the North CVC, as 10 minutes before the rally ended, I told my guys to start getting dressed. And within 5 minutes after I said that, then there was a radio call. The crowd started surging to the on the west front, and they requested a hard gear platoon or squad which it was us. Within 5 minutes, we were down on the west front. You're talking about running almost like a quarter mile through the building. Up the steps, cases, whatnot, in full uniform, running with all that gear. And that includes shield, baton, gas mask, and all that stuff. So by the time we got there to the west front, the officers who were at the bottom, which was two squads, they already had been being attacked. They already had been cornered. To the left side of the stage area, the right. So for them, by then it was chaotic by the time we got there.
Well, today you're hearing Capitol Police Officer Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell. Most of us have only heard or seen short video clips in the news from the day rioters stormed the Capitol building on January 6th. Sergeant Gunnell lived through it. He also testified before the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today, we are joined by Capitol Police Officer Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell. Now, he has served on the Capitol Police Force for 15 years, and he was there on January 6th, the day of the insurrectionist attack on Congress. And we just want to underscore to listeners that the views that Sergeant Gunnell expresses today are his own, and he is not here speaking on behalf of the Capitol Police Department. But Sergeant Gunnell, you were telling us about how you ran essentially through the Capitol in full gear in support of fellow officers who had already made contact with rioters as they were surging towards the building. Can you tell us a little bit about when you arrived and when you engaged with the insurrectionists? Like, what did you see? What did they say? What happened in those first moments?
During those first moments after I arrived to the West Front, it was immediately no time for us to give commands to my officers, to go this way or plan to tactically address the situation, because by then the other officers were being attacked. So we just reacted to whatever was in front of us. What was in front of us? You got people hitting my fellow officers with baton, using bike racks as a ramming tool, hitting them with pepper spray, bear spray, flagpole, you name it. And then all we were doing was just being defensive, defending our fellow officers. Some of those officers, the initial officers that were in that on the West Front, they didn't have hard gear. They didn't have a shield. Did they have a gun? Yes. One thing, it wasn't in their mind, it was not, and I think the judgment from all the officers that were there, the judgment was not to make things worse, not only for themselves, but also to the crowd, because some of the things that perhaps it was in the back of their mind was there were reports on that they seen from social media that these people were coming here with weapons. We did not see the weapons, so we automatically cannot start shooting at people just because we feel like it. You know, we had to see the threat, and the threat was there was not a handgun as of yet. We didn't see it, but there were reports that people were armed. Once I arrived there, we immediately started fighting these people hand to hand, push, shove, tell them to give them a command, back, stay back, go behind this line, behind that one line. So we established somewhat type of a perimeter. But then we lost it almost immediately once the crowd became more hostile to us.
Do you mind if I ask about how much were you outnumbered by?
From the time where I got there, it looks we were probably like 50 officers compared to a sergeant crowd. I don't know the exact amount of people who attended that rally and later on to move on towards the Capitol, but I know we were outnumbered at least 100 to 5, because they kept coming at us. And once we became more aggressive, once MPD came and literally, I say, literally, the help was out almost to a point of saving the day, because by the time they got there, we almost were cornered again a second time. Then we set up at a perimeter using their tactics, which was they had the police pepper spray, the police less than lethal weapons. That time we didn't. The officers there, we didn't have those available to us.
So the Capitol Police didn't have those, but the DC Metro Police did.
Yeah, correct.
And were able to. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, can you describe to me if what you were able to hear the rioters, the insurrectionists, sort of saying to you and your fellow officers? I mean, what did you see on their faces, and what did you hear?
I mean, you see the determination in the eyes, the level of intent, the things that we're saying. It's like, you are a traitor. You are choosing your paycheck over your oath. You are a disgrace. They also said that, remember your oath, join us. At some point, I heard people telling me, you're not even an American. Even as I have my gas mask on me, which is hard to tell my skin color, because I'm like fair light skin. Mm-hmm. So they don't know whether I'm a veteran from Iraq, or I served for 8 years in the Army Reserves and with one deployment overseas. But they don't know that. But yeah, they're calling me a traitor. People who clearly, to me, they seem to have military background, open law enforcement background, because they had veterans hat on. They had police blue line paraphernalia on them. And with the same flag that I sworn off to protect, here they are beating me up. Here they are attacking me and calling me names, yelling stuff at me and my fellow officers. And it was unreal. And at one point I'm like, how is this happening? How is this happening in America where, you know, we are supposedly a model for everybody else in the world as to conduct, how to conduct ourselves in the election and democracy. And, you know, it's unbelievable. Just thinking about that, it drives me crazy. And I swore my oath, but the oaths that I did, and the many times I did those, it was to defend the United States, the Constitution, not to be loyal to a president, not to be loyal to a party, but to the country. And that's what bothers me the most, that some of these people, they disregarded their oath off, their oath to defend and protect the Constitution and to hold the value of this country. And instead, they have sworn oath or fidelity to or fealty to this particular individual who at that time was president.
Sergeant Gunnell, if you can hang on here for just a second, I just want to remind folks that we are listening to Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell. He served on the Capitol Police Force for 15 years, and he was there on January 6th trying to defend the Capitol, trying to defend Congress from the insurrectionist mob that attacked the Capitol building. He has also testified before the House Select Committee looking into the January 6th attack. And Sergeant, if I could, I just want to play a moment from the testimony of that day, because four law enforcement officers testified, including your fellow Capitol Police officer, Harry Dunn. And he told the House Select Committee that he and other black officers were repeatedly denigrated, insulted by rioters using the N-word over and over again. And Officer Dunn told the committee about a moment where the crowd was yelling about President Biden. And Officer Dunn admitted to the crowd that he'd voted for Biden. And here's how they responded.
One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, "You hear that, guys? This voted for Joe Biden." Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, "Boo!" No one had ever called me a while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer. Another black officer later told me he had been confronted by insurrectionists in the Capitol who told him, "Put your gun down and we'll show you what kind of you really are."
Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn testifying before the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attacks. Sergeant Gunnell, during your testimony, you talked about how I believe that a Metropolitan Police officer or another law enforcement officer near you was being dragged into the crowd, and you tried to pull him back. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, it bothers me that people attack my fellow officers, especially Harry Dunn. He is a patriot, somebody who defended the Capitol. And even after all that, he's still getting messages like that with racial slur or epithets. I was probably targeted myself, but at that time, I didn't pay much attention. My focus was defending the Capitol, defending my fellow officers. And yes, I was yell some of those things, but it didn't faze me. I know those people were they felt entitled to be there. They felt entitled. Some of them they were saying those and worse. To put it bluntly, if I had to go through you, I will. That's what things that they were saying to me. And some of them they were telling me, you're not even an American. Even without seeing my last name or seeing my face, they were still doing that. Going back to the entrance, when I tried to help those officers were Black and they were defending the entrance. One of the officers I remember was pulled, one MPD officer was pulled to the crowd. Then a second officer went forward to help that other officers. And I know when he fell to the ground, I grabbed him by the collar and pulled him back to the police line. And I, to my knowledge, I don't remember what happened to the first officer. But then in the process of me helping that second officer that went to help, I fell on top of some shields and I was being dragged to the crowd. And here I am calling, yelling, pull me back, pick me up, help me. And with my gas mask on, I'm doing all this. I'm waving at the, pretty much gasping to the officer, MPD officer, Metropolitan Police officer. He's above me fighting for his life as well, too, because they were attacking him. And at one point, I grabbed his leg to hold myself, and I was able to kick and continue to kick the crowd as they were trying to drag me. At one point, I tried my ass baton one more time, and I said to myself at that point, like, if this fails, then I'm pulling my weapon, because at that time I was just fighting for my life. I did not want to be dragged to the crowd. I know that wouldn't be feasible for me. I knew that if I gone there, they would do things to me that I possibly was the same thing that happened to Fanon, MPD officer Fanon, or worse.
Yeah. How did what happened to you on that day, Sergeant Gunnell, compare to your service with the United States military, with the Army? You were deployed to Iraq for a year. How did January 6th compare to what you experienced in Iraq?
See, the thing about Iraq, at least for me, because I was born in the Dominican Republic. So for me, adjusting to the element, to seeing some of the despair and poverty and some of these places, it wasn't much of a shock to like some of my fellow soldiers at that time. A lot of them, they got homesick. A lot of them, it was the first time being in another country. So they never experienced that. But for me, the thing about Iraq was more like anxiety, not fear. If I tell you that I fear for my life in Iraq, maybe one or two times, that was tops two, three times. And that was when a motor landed near me, I say within 50 to 75 yards away from me. And it didn't go off because it was a dog. That's one incident. Then later on during my time there, there was another incident that, you know, the roads were packed with IEDs and during the insurrection in Iraq. Mortar landed at a cafeteria area in where I was and engulfed and killed some civilian contractors. Then another time in near the Post Exchange, which is a convenience store, the mortar landed outside and I was inside the building and all soldiers died just like 2 weeks before. 2 days before they were supposed to return back home for good. But those were incidents were separate in terms of like months, weeks, whatnot. In terms of here, the capital, it was something, it was continuous. It was relentless, one incident after another. I survived because I was getting attacked along with my fellow officers here in the Capitol, you know, 10 minutes ago, and then go somewhere else, and then another attack, and then you feel getting trampled at the entrance of the Capitol, not once, but multiple times, because now you got the rioters pushing into the building and the police officer pushing out. And here I am in the middle of both crowds, and I could feel my body getting trampled. I could feel my lungs getting harder to breathe and so on. So it was multiple times and more intense than my time in Iraq.
Well, today we are listening to Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell. He's served on the Capitol Police Force for 15 years. He was at the Capitol defending it on January 6th. We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Decades ago, Sterling Cunio was an angry, violent teenager facing life without parole. Today, he's a celebrated author and a peacemaker. His journey is a window into how violence is perpetuated in this country, but it's also a story about how people change.
There's no better example of a person who's prepared to be released.
And about people changing the system.
We have to reimagine what we're doing, because what we're doing isn't working.
This is Cell Blocks to Mountaintops, a podcast and video series. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are hearing from Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell. He has served with the Capitol Hill Police Force for 15 years, and he was one of the officers defending Congress on January 6th against the insurrectionist attack on that day. He also testified last week before the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. Alongside Sergeant Gunnell, Officer Michael Fanone of the Metropolitan Police Department testified as well. And here's a moment where he described to the Select Committee his sense of betrayal by the elected officials and staffers whose lives he defended and saved on that day.
What makes the struggle harder and more painful is to know so many of my fellow citizens, including so many of the people I put my life at risk to defend, are downplaying or outright denying what happened. I feel like I went to hell and back to protect them and the people in this room. But too many are now telling me that hell doesn't exist, or that hell actually wasn't that bad. The indifference shown to my colleagues is disgraceful.
Well, joining us now is Jack Beattie, On Point News Analyst. Hello there, Jack.
Hello, Meghna. Sergeant Gunnell, it's an honor to speak to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Likewise.
So, Jack, tell us your thoughts on what you've heard Sergeant Gunnell share so far.
Well, I just hope that this committee can perform its duties with the same courage and steadfastness that the sergeant and his colleagues displayed. They have to be worthy, these representatives, of their charge, and they have a high bar to come up with. Democracy was saved that day. The line held because of the sacrifice of Sergeant Gunnell and his colleagues. And in particular, this committee has to look at big questions that remain. I was looking at the Senate report on the insurrection and at the leaks from the report of the Inspector General for the Capitol Police, and questions just leap out. First, what about the White House? Were they involved? Yesterday, on C-SPAN, General Russell Honoré, who conducted an investigation for Speaker Pelosi of security conditions at the Capitol, General Honoré said, quote, he believed the White House was complicit in the riot. We've got to hear from him from that committee. Two, General William Flynn, the brother of Michael Flynn, who was one of the most he's the sort of furioso who around the president who was telling him, even in the days leading up to the riot, to declare martial law. General Flynn, in a meeting with people at the Pentagon and officials at the Capitol, said he didn't think it would be a good look to send the National Guard there. Well, sedition doesn't necessarily run in families, but we've got to hear from General William Flynn. Was he in any contact with his brother, who just the day before the riot had been addressing the soon to be rioters and inflaming their passions against Congress. We've got to hear from him. Three, 52, no less than 52, and probably more by now, former servicemen or current servicemen or law enforcement officials, current or former, were among the 400, this is some weeks ago, we don't know what the number is now, indicted for the riot. 52, that's got to be looked into. That's a serious, mm-hmm. that's a serious breach. Again, members of Congress, were they involved? There are reports from Representative Mikey Sherrill of New Jersey, a Democrat, that she saw Congress people leading large groups of, quote, tourists and constituents on Capitol tours in the days leading up to the riot. Now, what was unusual was that was, sort of in lockdown, not lockdown conditions, but there weren't many tours on because of COVID. That has to be looked into, whether members of Congress were involved. And finally, there are investigations apparently of upwards of 35 members of the Capitol Police themselves were looking into whether they aided the rioters. And Sergeant Gunnell, that you spoke about your trust in your fellow officers. I suspect that investigation into whether your colleagues aided these rioters, any of them, I suspect that must be especially painful for you.
Sergeant Gunnell, I want to hear your answer to that, but let me just remind listeners, by the way, that Sergeant Gunnell is here speaking on his own behalf, and I just want to reiterate that he's not speaking on behalf of the Capitol Police Force as a whole. But Sergeant Gunnell, go ahead. I mean, we've had comments coming in online of people wondering the same thing that Jack just asked, because of the video footage that many people saw that showed Capitol Police officers taking selfies with some of the rioters. But go ahead.
Well, I cannot attest to that because I wasn't there in that area. But I know if mm-hmm. I were there, I would have put that a stop to that, because when we signed up to do this job, we didn't sign up to only be a police officer for one party or the other. Same thing when I was in Iraq. I saw a conversation with one of the soldiers one day and was verbally abusing one of the Iraqis, and I put a stop to that. That night, we didn't get mortar. So I think I did my job in keeping us safe on that time. But it is disappointing that those are the reports. I cannot comment on those because I'm not privy to that side of the investigation, if there is an investigation. All I could tell you is that where I was, the lower stairs entrance, those officers, including many of the Metropolitan Police officers that did respond to assist me and my other officers, we were hell-bent in preventing those people from coming in, and we did that. We accomplished that. When I was I spent most of my time there during that day, and at no point in time we were concerned about what was happening in the other entrances, because the level of noise, the level of attack, the level of everything that was happening at that entrance, we thought, and I'm I could say that with certainty that we all thought that that was the only breach inside of the rioter trying to get into the Capitol, because the way they were fighting, because the types of attacks that we were getting. So in our mind, we were defending that entrance. And to us, that was the only entrance that they were trying to get in. I later on find out 4 hours later or 5 hours later when Ms. Boylan died, because we did CPR on her, me and my guys. And it was down to, we took her up almost to take her to the ambulance, that I find out that there were multiple breaches into the Capitol. And you cannot tell me that the president at that time did not know that what was happening. You cannot say he didn't watch TV when even Fox News had it on live broadcasting, and they themselves were calling, where's the president? Where's the help? Where's the military? So for somebody who continue for many years saying that, I know more than the general, I know more than the scientists, I know more than anybody else. So what happened this time? Was he in the bunker of the White House, crawl up, you know, like a baby, asking to himself, what had I done? What did, no. And then he comes back out 3 hours later to, instead of telling his supporters, hey, this is not what we had in mind when you said stop the steal, he just egged them and continued, this is what happened when you have fraudulent election, and I'm paraphrasing here. So you cannot say that he did everything as quickly as possible, because it took him almost 6 hours for him to send the military, to authorize the military and all the other agencies. We got help. Yeah. Yes, after all the people other than him did that. And we only 16 blocks away from the White House. So you could probably see all the chaos that it was happening around that time from multiple angles. And well, I think...
Go ahead. Sergeant, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting you, but to the point that you're making, I mean, we know that he had that former President Trump was watching what was going on television, and even speaking to members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, who were imploring him to call off the attack or send reinforcements. So I hear what you're saying about needing answers to that question.
Here's the thing, and pardon me, I interrupt you. So when you have the same people that were pleading to send help, those people were running scared that day. When they were running scared, they were asking for help from the president, and we held the line to giving the amount of time that they needed to get to safety. And just like Officer Fanon said at the committee hearing, these very same people who we gave them the time to escape, to get to safety, some of those people helped barricade the chambers where they were in Congress. And those are the same people who now are saying, well, it wasn't that bad. When you have the entire line of succession to the presidency, besides Donald Trump at that time, everybody else in line for the succession of the president was at the Capitol certifying the elections. This was a coordinated, to me, it seemed like a coordinated plan attack on the Capitol, because he's the only one not there. He declared martial law if we start fighting the rioter or with firepower, guns and whatnot. He's the only one left to stay in power. So, you know, you send people to attack your own vice president, which also has the nuclear codes in a briefcase along with him. Those rioters, when they got to the Senate, they went through all those desks, the senator's desks, whatever was classified in there, some of these offices, like Speaker Pelosi offices, they went live streaming that stuff to the war. Now, imagine what would have happened if that would they had gotten their hands on the briefcase of the vice president, or if they had actually kidnapped him and hang him like they were saying, because I heard that when I was in the line at the bottom of the West Front, when they were saying, we are here for Nancy Pelosi, hang Mike Pence. And if we have to go through you, we'll do that. And they were intent. Wow. Their intent was to stop and kill everybody who was inside the building, not just Democrats or independent, also Republicans.
So that's a chilling, chilling reminder of what was at stake on January 6th. Sergeant, I've only got 3 minutes left with you, maybe even a little less than that. And there's a couple of two or three more questions I'm very anxious to ask you if I could.
Sure. No problem.
You know, you're talking about the members of Congress who and how they Republican members of Congress have sort of stepped back and or denied the intensity of the day. What would you say to your fellow Americans as well? Because, I mean, there's recent polls that show that Republican voters are more likely to blame President Biden and congressional Democrats for the events that led to the Capitol attack, that 27% of Trump voters and a quarter of Republicans recently said they approved of the assault, and 46% of GOP voters, while they say that it's important for the federal government to investigate what happened, 68% of Republican voters also say that the January 6th attack has gotten too much attention. So just briefly, if you could, what would you say to your fellow Americans?
It is disgraceful. I mean, you have me coming from another country, sworn off, and I'm taking that oath to defend the country more serious than the member of Congress and senators and people, elected officials, and even civilians here, they're saying to condoning this attack on democracy, condoning this attack on his own vice president, and to putting our American democratic system in jeopardy by not investigating. And like I said, some of these people who we put our lives on the line to protect them, now is telling us, oh, it wasn't that bad. And it's shameful. It's very unpatriotic. They violated their oath of office by not putting the country above the party. And just because they want to get a tweet from this particular person or the other, or putting their political life ahead of the good of the country. And it's shameful.
Well, I have 1 minute left with you, and you've spoken so many times and so eloquently about the fact that you've many times chosen to take that oath to defend the U.S. Constitution as a naturalized citizen, as a member of the United States military, and as a law enforcement officer. We've just got 30 seconds, Sergeant. What is it about America that inspired you to take that oath so many times?
I have my background. I was born in a rural area of small town, and this country has given me a lot of opportunity. But I do want to say one thing before we finish. Please go to the FBI website and look at these individuals, the rioters, in connection with the Capitol. And if you know anybody who was there, anybody who recognize, please report him, because we still suffering from it. An officer just died 2 days ago, and he responded to the Capitol on January 6th. This is still ongoing for us. It's not over.
Sergeant Aquilino Gonell with the Capitol Police Force. Sergeant Gonell, thank you so very much for joining us today and for your service as well. And Jack Beattie, On Point News Analyst, thank you as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.